Hello, everyone. This is Tom Trush of RightWaySolutions.com, and welcome to the latest installment of my Marketing Mind series. These interviews are designed to provide you with easy access to some of the best marketing resources available. My goal is to give you useful ideas and valuable tools you can use immediately to attract attention, create customers, and build your business. Best of all, these recordings are free for you to use and distribute, so please feel free to pass them on to anyone who wants to enhance their promotional efforts. On this recording, you'll hear from Alan Rudnick. Thanks to his involvement on social networking sites such as Facebook and Twitter, as well as frequent blogging, Alan is often featured in major media and has even secured a multi-book deal with a publisher. And get this, he's not a conventional social media guru. In fact, he doesn't even work in what many would consider a traditional business. He's the pastor at the First Baptist Church of Boston Spa in Boston Spa, New York. If you don't use social media because you believe your prospects won't respond to it or that your industry doesn't lend well to this marketing medium, then I urge you to listen to Alan's tips and techniques. During this 42-minute interview, you'll discover several social media strategies that silence skeptics, as well as the best defense against falling into social media fatigue and how to ensure automated tools don't cause you to lose your personal touch with followers. The surprisingly simple key to finding the most beneficial people to interact with on social networking sites, and why prospects aren't the only people needing your attention. How leveraging a certain type of news event in your blog posts can help you boost readership and attract inquiries from major media. The surest way to get a quick response from almost anyone you follow, including industry experts and well-known celebrities. An easy approach to establishing yourself as an authority, and therefore a source media members want to interview, on global news topics. Why having a large audience on social media can sabotage your success, and much more. So let's get started. Okay, Alan, let's go ahead and we'll get started here. What we're going to talk about is social media, and the reason that I have you, that I want to do this call today is because you're someone who's excelling in social media. And it's really in a business that really isn't a traditional business for social media. So I think it's a perfect opportunity to get some insight into how to use social media from somebody who isn't necessarily a quote guru, and somebody who's just doing this every single day and has figured out how to be successful. So let's go ahead and we'll just start off. Alan, can you give a little bit of background about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I am a blogger. I'm also an author of a book coming out next year. And I'm also a pastor, which makes my work a little bit unique, working in ministry and working in a capacity that seeks to help people, but also to convey a religious message. So my social media presence and what I've been doing the last couple of years have really kind of been merging into one. So not only do I have an online presence as a commentator, a blogger on religious issues, faith issues, but also having a ministry component, being a pastor full time. So part of my upbringing and education was pretty traditional, undergraduate, graduate school, that type of thing. And then as the years progressed and kind of coming from Generation X, always having technology being a part of my education, always being a part of my life. And as social media kind of emerged, and as I became more and more involved in my profession and more involved in what was going on with blogging and Facebook and Twitter, things really started to kind of take off, and it just became a natural progression of, one, to kind of share my content on my blog, but also to see it as a ministry of what I do. So it's interesting. Some people want to say, you know, they just see me as a pastor, where I also see myself, yeah, I'm a pastor, but I'm also someone who has a quote-unquote market of people and has a content to deliver in a way that is instant, in a way that's kind of meaningful.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We were talking before the call that, you know, what you're really, like I said before, this is kind of an industry where, you know, blogging, social media isn't really a a traditional way to communicate with people. I mean, you had mentioned yourself that most people think, you know, in the churches that it's just old people around, but it sounds like things are changing in that, you know, getting in front of a younger audience. This is the, you know, not only are they at the church, but, you know, this seems like there's maybe is there maybe a change going on where, you know, now this is the way, one of the ways to communicate with that younger audience and show them that, you know, you're just like them.
Yeah, and that's definitely a trend that has been shifting and still is shifting, that everyone thinks technology is a young people's game. And it's not. It's for everyone. You know, when you have, you know, you have teenagers on Facebook, and what started to happen is their parents started going on Facebook and started sharing pictures and different things. And then their grandparents, you know, started getting on Facebook and sharing things. So it's a way for me to connect to people on a level that, yeah, there's phone calls, there's letters, things like that. But with social media, it's so instant that as soon as we have a concert at our church, I can post those pictures, post video, post people's reactions to that on our blog, on our Facebook page. And people can see that instantly, so that when they're thinking about the church or visiting the church, people see that immediately. And that's the thing, is that it's just another tool. Social media is just another tool to connect people. And I think people of all ages are finally realizing that it's not just a novelty, but it's something that businesses are using, and it's something that churches are using more and more, because they see that they don't have to put a whole lot of money or resources behind it, and they see the immediate benefit of having a social media presence.
Right, right. And now you saw the natural fit, but you know, there are a lot of people out there who that natural fit isn't as clear. They're still hesitant to get started in social media. I mean, do you have any recommendations for people who they just feel like, you know, maybe if they're intimidated, but you know,
yeah,
what are your
absolutely
thoughts for just getting started, just getting into it? Do you have any advice?
Yeah, this same question was asked to me when I was giving a social media presentation in San Juan, Puerto Rico, of a crowd of middle-aged people, people who were kind of really doubtful of, you know, can social media really work for me, my church, my business? And I'd say anyone who's kind of doubtful or hesitant to get into social media, I think the first thing is that you can't compare what you want to do to someone else. You know, if you want to go out there and be a huge social media presence, like a celebrity or star, you're probably getting into it for the wrong reason. You know, first you have to realize, you know, what is my goal? You know, what is my goal in having an online presence on Facebook or Twitter? You know, do I just want a lot of followers, or do I actually want to connect with people, with clients, with businesses? And so if you can clarify what your goal should be, then you can be getting on to the next step, which is starting to build a base, which is something that has to be organic. You can't force it. You can't force 1,000 followers on Twitter or 2,000 followers. Make social media work for you. You know, have a very simple Facebook page or a very simple website, and start basic. Don't think you have to, you know, hit a home run at your first at bat. You know, some of it is trial and error. And the more natural you make it, the more you make it at your pace, the more that people will see the value in what you're doing, rather than trying to be something you're not. And that's why I tell people, don't try to be someone you're not through social media. Be yourself. You know, if you're a very outgoing person, you know, people will see that in what you're doing and what you promote. But if you're more of an introvert, then maybe your real niche is that you communicate people one-on-one online in a way that will help establish your product or your industry or your business.
Do you think when they're just getting started, that they get hung up too much with the number of followers, say on Twitter, or the number of friends on Facebook or likes on a Facebook business page? Is that something that holds people back? They think, you know, if I don't have a huge audience, what's the point of doing this?
Yeah, and that's a big misconception about social media. My philosophy has always been, it's not how many people are following you, it's how you're engaging the audience that you have. So you can be a really efficient Twitterer or person on Facebook you may only have, you know, 150 or 200 people following you or you're friends with, but if you engage in a quality way those 150 or 200 people, that will be much more of a benefit to you or your product or your business, and for me, for ministry, than saying trying to get lots of people and not connecting with them, because you'll actually lose people. If you're not putting out any type of quality message, even if it's you know, once a day or three times a day or whatever it is, you know, people are going to lose interest. So if you're more concerned about followers, you're getting into social media for the wrong reason. Social media should just be another tool, and people need to see it and not be intimidated, to see it as just another tool for people to use so that they can connect. And that's the goal. It's really, when people get started, they need to finish the statement, I want to have a presence on Facebook so that, and finish the statement. And that'll help you realize where your passion will be or what your goal will be. Instead of just opening up a Facebook account or a Twitter account, just kind of blindly and not knowing what you're doing, you know, you really have to have a purpose. You know, I want to have a Facebook account so that I can share updates about my product or updates about my blog. And so if you make that goal or you make that kind of purpose statement, that'll really help you be really efficient, and it really will help you focus your social media presence online.
Good point. Now, one of the things you just mentioned here, too, was that you blog, and you blog quite a bit. And before the call, we had talked about the opportunity that came up for you where you're also blogging for your local newspaper. And I know that's an opportunity that many people would love to have. So, you know, can you give a little insight into how that opportunity came about, how you were able to expand just your personal blog to having an audience that reads, you know, the local newspaper now seeing your blog?
Yeah. Well, for me, I saw an opportunity. One was that I would see different news stories, different news items, and I wanted to comment on them, wanted to also provide a ministry resource for people. And so I started my own blog, which was just really easy through WordPress. And as I started the blog, my audience grew and grew. But then I saw an opportunity that came up that in the Albany Times Union newspaper, I saw that there was no Christian blogging presence. Nobody had a blog from the perspective of Christianity or anything revolving around Christian issues. So I emailed the blog content editor and followed up with a phone call and asked him if I could do that and for him to take a look at my blog. And so he took a look at it, and he said he loved it, and he said, we'd love to have you be our blogger for Christianity. So really it was an opportunity that I kind of went out to look, you know, for some ways in which I could, you know, advertise my blog or get the word around. And I really stumbled upon, in that search, I stumbled on the fact that there was this huge missing niche at the Albany Times Union. And because I already had my own blog up and running, they saw the content, they could read it, they knew what they're getting into, and it was an easy decision for them.
Now, I've seen also that you've posted on Facebook where you've been interviewed also, in addition to your newspaper stuff, but also interviewed on, like, the news and you know, other media opportunities. Have those come across or come as a result of your blogging?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I got a call from a radio station in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh. I blogged on the Joe Paterno incident and the Penn State incident, Sandusky, and that whole Penn State scandal. And they saw that it was on my blog on the Albany Times Union, and they liked what I had to say, and they wanted to interview me for the radio program. And actually, I was interviewed right after a major author and seminary professor. And so being interviewed, like, right after him was really cool, because it was like, wow, you know, these people really see me as someone who brings some sort of authoritative presence in terms of commenting on the Penn State scandal from a faith perspective. And so then I started getting people interested in reviewing books on my blog, people doing book tours, blog tours. And so, you know, reviewing books. And then I started to see that different news services or different news outlets or religion newsletters started to quote me for my blog. And so as the content came, so did also people seeing the content, you know, people just doing Google searches of a particular phrase. And then so, you know, search engine optimization and all that stuff became something that I started to research more and more. And so as the interest in the blog grew, so did my interest in getting into more of the finer details of social media so that I could be more effective when people are searching a news story, a religious news story that's going on right now. I want to be able to be one of the top searches that comes up. So it's really kind of, as each opportunity has come, it really propelled me and encouraged me to go further and to learn more so that I could continue my presence and continue of being more and more of an outlet for religious commentary and ministry on my blog.
There's an incredible tip within there where you're talking about, you know, you're blogging about topics that are in the news. And I mean, that's if it's in the news, you know, people are already searching on it. So you've already given yourself a jump start on people finding your blog because you're writing about topics that people are already searching for. But I want to go into some detail on, you know, how do you pick out the specific topics to blog about? Is it just, are you just following the news, or is there just things that come up during your daily activities that you think, ooh, I'd make a great blog post? I mean, what's the criteria for you taking the time to write a blog post?
Yeah. Probably my first priority is it timely? Is it something current? I don't want to write about anything that happened 6 months ago that nobody has any interest in. So I always try to write and try to keep an eye on several news services and keep an eye on CNN and Washington Post, LA Times. I just keep an eye on some news items that may or may not have to do with anything on my blog. So one time, it seemed like in the news there were, it was a couple of years ago where we seemed to have a lot of angry outbursts, in Congress and sports events on TV shows. And so I wrote a blog post called Three Reasons Why We Love, Angry Outbursts. And that really got people interested because at the time, the real hot news story was a congressman interrupting President Barack Obama in the middle of his speech at the Congress. And so everyone was talking about that. So I kind of tried to find an angle on that story that was different. Everyone is searching and talking about this particular story. And so what I tried to do is I tried to come up with an angle that nobody's talking about, so that it kind of catches the interest at a level where people are already searching on that particular news topic. But to come up with a blog post that's kind of compelling and different. And so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And that's part of the trial and error of blogging and social media. And then also I always try to find stories that, may be not necessarily kind of hot news stories on a national level, but there's some local news stories that people know about in the Albany, New York area, that are kind of keyed into. So I try to just keep a pulse on the news that's going on locally in the religious news and also what's going on with technology, how Facebook is evolving. I remember on my WordPress blog, I blogged about how when Facebook changed over to the news feed feature on the website, I blogged a topic about the pitfalls of the Facebook news feed. Well, it was timely enough that WordPress.com picked it up and featured it on their site. So all of a sudden, I had thousands of people reading my post just because I blogged on just kind of a hot topic.
Wow, that's incredible. just instant traffic. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, instant traffic. I mean, you know, I went from, you know, a couple hundred people a day to a couple thousand, you know, in a matter of minutes.
Wow.
And it was just because I found a timely news topic and I used a service that already had a broad base of users.
Now, are there, in addition to writing about timely topics and getting that stuff onto your own blog and letting people find it via search engines, is there other ways that you're using to direct attention to your blog? Like, for example, are you when you come up with a topic that's newsworthy or a different angle on a newsworthy event, are you sending out press releases or, you know, what are some other ways that you're attracting attention to your blog?
I don't do the press release thing because it doesn't really work for me personally. But my main base of getting the word out is Facebook, because I've already built, and when I was doing this, I didn't even know that I would be writing a blog. I've already built a large network of people on Facebook, friends, colleagues, people I've met. And so I have a little over 1,000 friends on Facebook. And so when I write a blog post, I just post it on my page and immediately people are reading it. People are looking at it. And also I use Twitter. You know, I go on Twitter and because I've already built a base of people, who have similar interests to me, I'll write a post. And if it's particularly interesting that I know it'll be interesting to some people, I'll tag those people, on Twitter so that they can read it. And so people, when they read it, they say to their followers, hey, you know, you should check this out. And so they retweet it. So I really just use Facebook and Twitter as the main modes of getting the word out about a blog post or something I'm working on.
Okay. Let's go in. You mentioned those two different social networking sites, Facebook and Twitter. Can you go into some detail as to what do you view as being the differences between the major social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, Google+, those kind of things. And then, you know, how do you determine where to focus your attention?
Yeah. I like to think you have to think about it this way. If you want to say information is like a body of water, then Facebook is like a dammed lake. There's this whole hole of information in this lake, and it's slowly being let out. So somebody can post something on Facebook, and it'll float around that lake for a couple hours, sometimes even for a couple of days. And you can go back to that information because the information is kind of dammed up and it's released slowly. Facebook is more of a connecting website that you don't have to worry about the speed at which you need to keep up with everything. Whereas Twitter is more like a river. If you put, you know, a little paper boat in a river, it's just going to fly down, and chances are you're not going to catch it. And so with Twitter, it's a constant flow, a stream of information. And as that stream is running, you can only keep up with it as much as you're standing on the banks, and you just scoop up some water, scoop up some information, and take it at the moment. So Twitter is much more instant. It's much more instant. You have to be a little bit more regimented about checking and reading Twitter, having it on your BlackBerry or on your iPhone or on your Android device, so that as the day goes by, you're checking or reading Twitter. Whereas Facebook, you know, several hours can go by, maybe even a day could go by, and you can still keep up on information and replies. So I would say those are the two main differences, thinking about those two websites, you know, as a way of one is more of a slow release of information, and the other one is just a constant stream that either you keep up with it or you don't.
Have you done anything with, you know, you start hearing the whispers now, and they're getting louder with Google+. Have you messed around with Google+ any?
Yeah, at first I was really skeptical because Google has done a number of social media websites or tools that have really flopped. And so when Google+ came out, I immediately grabbed an account just in case if it begins to grow. And I just saw a news article that talked about they think in a year from now that, you know, Google+ could, you know, quadruple the amount of users. I think they already have 55 or 60 million users. and they could quadruple that number in a year. So I've began to build a base of people on Google Plus, but I haven't really committed to it yet because not enough people are on it. You know, the day will come probably when Facebook, just like MySpace, becomes less interesting. It's possible that Google Plus could be, but I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket already. I kind of want to, you know, just kind of test the waters a bit and continue to use, you know, Facebook and Twitter until those no longer become effective avenues for sharing information.
Yeah, I agree with you. I see with the Google Plus, I also have an account, but it seems very people seem very slow to embrace it who are outside of the business community or the social media community. So, like, general, just people who you see on Facebook posting a lot on Facebook, I think it's just hard to get them to now transition over to another medium. So you're right. I think it will take some time, and we just kind of have to wait it out and see what's going to happen.
I don't know about you, but from time to time, I get social media fatigue. I get fatigued by, you know, Facebook, keeping up with Facebook, keeping up with Twitter, that I don't want another site to keep up with. And so I started using a number of tools that you can cross. When you post something on Facebook, it'll also post on Twitter and vice versa. And I just think people can only organize their online social media life between so many sites. And something like Google Plus, I think the reason why Google has not been successful is because MySpace, Twitter, Facebook, those were all organic startups. They were started by a small group of people who had a small idea that got big, whereas Google is trying to make a big idea by starting it, making it big. And so I think that's one of the reasons why they haven't met much success is because when a company says, here's this great product, use it, it's not going to have the same effect where it's organic, that as people begin to use it and as people begin to give feedback, it can organically evolve as people need it to change. So the products that Google has been putting out are products saying, this is the next great thing, and people say, no, it isn't, because it needs these 10 things. And then it takes, you know, months for Google to catch on, to know why it's not becoming an effective tool for social media. So right now, for me, Facebook and Twitter is about all I can do.
Yeah. I know with Google Plus, the one feature that I do like that's different that isn't available on Facebook and Twitter is the Hangout feature. Have you used that one?
I haven't used it. I haven't used it that much, no.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It just allows you to, you know, have these video chats with people who are in your circles, and you can have, is it up to 10 or 8 or something, but very cool. And what I like about it is there are some people who have embraced that quite a bit. There's an author that I follow, Martin Lindstrom, who he's a great writer, and Facebook one time, about a month ago, he puts a note out there and says, I'm looking to do a hangout tomorrow, and you know, he put the time, and I'm going to select random Facebook users to join me in the hangout, and fortunately I was one of them selected. And so I was one of, I think there were 7 people total on this call, and we were able to go back and forth with him via video and ask him questions about marketing and his books. And so it's really cool. It's a great feature because you get that personalization where you're just talking as if the person's sitting right in front of you at a desk or something, or at a, you know, sitting next to you at the bar. So it's very, very cool feature that you know, I'm kind of waiting to see if more people latch on to it. But I like that's the primary feature that I think Google Plus has that's different than some of the other social media sites. Let's get into, you mentioned a little bit earlier about tools that you use for social media and doing like multiple posting in multiple places at once. Can you go into some detail on what tools you help or do you use to help with your social media efforts?
Yeah, for me, I try not to use too many automated social media tools because if you use too many automated tools, it really, you really lose that personal touch that we were just talking about. You really lose that personal touch with your connected followers or your constituents, because if people feel that you're just putting out kind of a robo content, they're not going to feel like you're a quality contact. So I definitely like to use things like TweetDeck, which is now owned by Twitter, that allows me to keep track of new followers. It allows me to keep track of hot trends on Twitter. It allows me to keep track of all the direct messages I get. So that's been helpful. Hootsuite is a good one because they have a little icon button where I'll at the beginning of the day I'll identify, you know, probably about 10 news stories that are kind of religion-based news stories, and I'll time them throughout the day so I don't have to be sitting there at my desk, you know, waiting to send these out, to space these out to my followers. So I'll use Hootsuite to kind of space all those stories out. Also, there's a number of Twitter tools that are out there that can help you identify. One is called Unfollow, and you can see actually who's unfollowed you. And that's kind of helpful because if you see that people in a particular profession or particular niche are starting to unfollow you, then that lets you know that that commentary you've been providing for one reason or another has not hit a sweet spot with those people. So that's something that people rarely use, but I think is really important to know why people begin to unfollow you, because that can help kind of focus your content to say, yeah, I don't really need to worry about those people, or I'm in the marketing business and all these marketing people are unfollowing me. You know, what am I doing? What am I saying to disengage those people? So that becomes important. Also, I found a couple automated tools to be helpful. Like a big thing is like Follow Friday on Twitter. And so if you've been interacting with a certain people at a certain frequency during the week, you can use the Auto Follow Friday tool to already search your timeline in Twitter, and it'll automatically post, you know, the top 3 or the top 10 people you've been talking with that week, and it'll automatically post that for you. There's also a variety of sites that obviously you can cross-use, LinkedIn and Foursquare. You can all link that to your Twitter account so that you can post if you've been somewhere. Maybe you want to say you've been to the Google headquarters. You can go on Foursquare, post that you were there, and it'll automatically post it on your Facebook or automatically post it on your Twitter. So I really try to find tools that just try to help bridge all the different social media content in a way that doesn't make it so kind of robo-message that it's already kind of spitting out with that looks, you know, impersonal. And the great thing is that all these sites are beginning to realize that you need to integrate all of these tools together. So finally, Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare and LinkedIn are starting to allow all these sites to access one another. So that helps keep the daunting task of updating all these sites easy by just updating it one place.
Right, good point. Now, you mentioned something early on in that response with a word that jumped out to me, and that's interact. And it's something we haven't covered too much in our talk here. But how do you determine who are the best people to interact with on social media? So it's not just putting out – you're just putting out content. You're also interacting with people. How do you find those people, and how do you determine who should get your attention when it comes to just interacting?
Yeah, I try to look for people who are already interested in the same things I'm interested. And I personally, I try not to connect with the people who say, you know, I'm a social media guru or I'm a marketing, you know, pro, and look at all my great followers. I want to follow somebody who's more down to earth, who I know that I can connect with. And it's really been cool to see that emerge, because I want to connect with people who have the same interests in me in religion and faith and social media, but aren't people who are so you know, above the clouds, that they don't have time to interact with me. So I really kind of built a base of people who I, you know, basically I know that anybody who I follow, I can interact with them, and I know I'll get a response from them pretty quickly. It's really kind of interesting. Actually, several celebrities are on Twitter. And one day, I really like Time Magazine's Joel Stein. I really think he's funny and witty writer. And so one day I was reading one of his articles in Time Magazine, and he talked about how he was on Twitter. And so I went on Twitter, and I saw, oh, man, he's got a lot of followers, and, you know, he says some real funny stuff. So I started following him to read it. And so one day I was thinking of a witty tweet that I could write about Joel Stein. And so I said something like, you know, my goal in life is to get Joel Stein to follow me so I can brag to all my followers, and then they can all unfollow me because they're tired of me sulking in my friendship with Joel Stein. And he thought that was really funny, and he started following me. And he has, like, I don't know, over 1 million followers, and he only follows about 200 people. And then from there, I started emailing back and forth with Joel Stein. And I talked about how I used a couple of his articles and stories and sermons, and he wanted to know more about it. And so talking with Joel Stein kind of formed this social media relationship. And he's a guy that's, you know, he's real down to earth. And he's a guy who, you know, will interact with people. Whereas if you follow Shaq on Twitter, you know, and you want a response from him, don't expect one. Yeah. But there are some celebrities, and there are some people out there in certain industries who, you know, have a ton of followers and who are down to earth that you can interact with and, you know, be able to engage in a meaningful way.
Cool. Well, one final question here. I want to respect your time. Looks like we're getting up to about 35 minutes here. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what do you believe the future of social media holds, and are there any changes or advancements that you predict we might see?
Yeah, it's always hard to predict social media because it's not changing on a yearly or monthly basis. It's really changing on a daily basis. As technology with smartphones become more and more advanced and more integrated, I think with social media, you'll start to see everyday devices begin to integrate with social media. So, for instance, we've already seen Blu-ray players, DVD players that have Wi-Fi on them. And so you can access additional content online. But now what some of those players are doing, now those players can interact with your Facebook to tell your friends what you're watching. And so one of my big concerns about where we're emerging in social media is how much information we're sharing. That's something that I think people don't realize. People sometimes go overboard on what they share. I mean, some things we just don't need to know. Other things are, some of them are privacy issues. So my big concern is that as we become more and more connected, we really have to be careful about what we share and how all of our devices, everyday devices, I mean, it may be pretty soon that our coffee maker is going to have Wi-Fi. People are going to know when we're making coffee. I mean, that information really isn't dangerous. But, you know, if all of a sudden our spending habits and our driving habits, if those are being recorded to the general public or even to a small cadre of companies, we really have to be careful and vigilant about what we share and how we share it. And so as it becomes, it will continue. Here's a prediction I know will probably come true, that as we get further in social media, it will become easier and easier to share information. But the key is that those companies are going to be watching that information to try to gain some perspective on marketing or buying habits of people. And so we really have to be mindful and really have some type of degree of ethical philosophy about what companies should be sharing or what we should be sharing and how we should be sharing it.
I think you're right. I think that is going to become an issue because, it seems as people get more and more involved in social media, their barriers, they break down more and more. I mean, they're sharing more and more, and it could get to a point. It's already getting to a point where I think people, they post a lot of stuff that people really don't care about, others don't care about. But you just wonder when it's going to get to be too much, I guess. But bottom line is, you don't see social media going anywhere. It's not just a fad, right?
Well, I don't think it's a fad because we see the amount of resources companies, major Fortune 500 companies, are putting into sites like Twitter and Facebook and social media. Businesses have finally realized that it's not a 1990s.com, here today, gone tomorrow type of thing. You know, some of these sites are really connecting people, in a way. And so people are using social media as a way to do giveaways, to do promotion. That's all free content. That's all free stuff that companies and businesses can use. And I think organizations and businesses are seeing just how big it's becoming. I mean, there's 500 million people on Facebook in the world. And something like that isn't going to go away tomorrow. Facebook may not always be around, but we see that Google has lasted a long time. You know, Google really came on the scene in 98, and it's still going strong. And so I think we'll begin to see social media and social media companies, the ones that will survive, were the ones that will begin to evolve as needed to be able to meet demand and see new opportunities. I don't think it'll be going away, but it'll just look different from now, 5-10 years from now. But we'll continue to use the social media concept for this to be foreseeable future.
All right, excellent insight. Well, before we end here, I just want to give you an opportunity to tell people in case people have questions for you or want to see some of your work, can you share your blog and if you feel comfortable, maybe a way to reach you in case anyone has any questions about their social media efforts. And also, of course, you mentioned before you're an author and you've got a book coming out, so definitely be sure and mention that book as well.
Absolutely. The best way, if you're on Twitter, you can look me up on Twitter or follow me, add me. My Twitter handle is Alan Rudd, A-L-A-N-R-U-D. You can certainly look me up on Facebook, but please check out my Albany Times Union blog by going to timesunion.com, clicking on the blog section, and then scrolling down looking for my name. Also, you can go to my personal blog, which is on the BEMA, BEMA.com, to check out information on, I often post on social media, commentary on what Facebook is doing and Twitter is doing. And I do have a book coming out. It's a book that is kind of a tight niche market. It's called The Work of the Associate Pastor, Associate Minister with Judson Press, and it's coming out next fall.
Excellent. So something to look forward to. Well, Alan, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some insight into social media, especially, like I said at the beginning, that you're really excelling at social media, and I really admire it, especially because it's an industry that many people just wouldn't view as a industry that embraces social media. So I commend you for that, and I'm a fan. I enjoy watching what you're doing on social media. Again, thanks for the time.
Sure, Tom. Thank you.
All right. Hello, this is Tom Trush from RightWaySolutions.com with a final tip. If you'd like more free ideas for enhancing your marketing message and building your business, please visit www.rightwaysolutions.com/blog. That's www.rightwaysolutions.com/blog.